What you're about to hear is unsupervised.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Stanley Cup of Chowder's Unsupervised Podcast. You're here for episode 3. My name's Adam Denhard, hosting this week. And we're joined today by, as usual, our friend and fellow writer, Colin Beswick. Colin, how you been? How's the weekend?
Yeah, it's pretty good. No complaints here. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I think I've more or less recovered from the hangover from yesterday. The hockey hangover, anyway, as unfortunate as that was. We're also joined by fellow Adam and fellow hockey enthusiast Adam Selvig from Pension Plan of Puppets, just to talk through the game and series with us. Adam, how are you doing?
I'm all right. It's been quite a week and a half so far, but yeah, it's been okay.
Well, we're glad to have you on with us, and why don't we get right in it? So I think we're trying to get a little overarching idea of the series that we've had so far. Adam, why don't you lead us off? How do you think that the series is going for either team, really? How do you think it's played out?
I think it's like just looking at it top level. I think it's been going well for Boston. You know, everything seems to be going, from my view anyway, you know, you guys are watching the Bruins differently, but from what I see, everything's pretty much going their way. They're getting a lot of power play time this series, and it seems to be as soon as the Bruins score a goal, everything starts going their way too. You know, I think like game 6, Leafs are up 2-0, it's going really great, and Boston scores, and it's just the feeling I've been watching with has just sunk. As soon as Boston scores, it's like, oh, here we go. It's done. But, you know, I think it's been an interesting series to watch, if not a more stressful series to watch than we would have seen against, I say, Tampa.
Now, do you say that because the friends that you're watching too still have 2013 fresh in their minds? I try not to go back to it too often, but I mean, it's, I can only imagine how much it might sting.
Well, I think not in game one, not really, but as the series has gone on, I think it's just been, oh, okay, now Boston's in this game. No, now they're here. You know, what was it, game 4, game 5, when they scored 30 seconds in? And that was it. It was Boston's game. So I think there's just that worry that as soon as they score, the everything shifts. It's now Boston's game. So I think that's more the worry than revisiting past losses.
Well, that's fair. And, you know, I've been trying to put it out of my mind, like I said, because it can't dwell on it. It's a whole new playoffs. And clearly it's been a totally, you know, a totally balanced series over the course of it. I mean, you said that it's been even, you know, and then you see it start to go Boston's way. Well, you know, on the other side of it, especially watching, you know, Saturday night's game, that it's been a bit of the tilt in the other direction, where no matter how hard Boston pushed, they just couldn't make up the difference, at least that game. Colin, how do you feel like things are going so far?
Sort of been a tale of two halves, so to speak. The first two games, obviously, I think, you know, they went Boston's way. But even as they were happening, I sort of had the thought in my head, like, this series is far from over. Toronto is just too good of a team to have expected the Bruins to continue outscoring them, you know, by that margin. And I think, frankly, even with some of the lopsided scores we've seen at, you know, 5-on-5, the teams have been pretty closely matched each night they've played. So I think we're in for a longer series than a lot of Bruins fans thought at first. And if you take out the, you know, the home team, rooting for the home team aspect, it's been some pretty fantastic hockey across the board. So it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, it's for me too. Again, it's been an interesting series, but from, you know, you tried to leave it out, and I'll put us back in that frame of mind that it's from the fan side of things. You had a little bit more of an expectation from Boston to take control, and now that we're going into game 6, I mean, it's been a little bit of a downer to see, you know, one of the first times in the last several months where Boston wasn't able to to pick up the slack. And I don't know if either you guys saw this, but it's been as polar opposites for each change in the flow of the series. You know, coming into game six, I really thought that Boston would have had some strong momentum, but they didn't start off so hot. And I thought that earlier games in the series, they were, had some jump to get the game going, like Adam mentioned, getting an early goal in one of the games and being able to control play. It looked like Toronto had the benefit of it, and not just from having the chance to counter, but that they really had their legs under them at home. And Adam, I don't know if you saw some of this, but was there any additional concern of, having to play two games back to back and not being able to come to Boston energized?
A couple losses to start off, and you start worrying about getting stuck in that mindset. It's like Boston scores again. It's like, okay, well, let's just try and play catch up. And I think we've seen some of that, but this has just been more of a, it's been a very emotionally confusing series for me. Whereas I just don't know what to do with any of it.
And to the same degree for us too, I think having to watch Toronto take control of some games gave me personally at least a bit of concern about, I had originally thought this game was going to go five, maybe six, and it didn't go that way. It's been a back and forth last couple of games, and I think it's really tightening up for the next game. Colin, was there anything that worried you about Boston's play or that was, giving you a bit of a nervous racket for how Toronto was doing?
So there's two main culprits, I'd say. The first is, the lack of finish from the top two lines for Boston. Last night, or I should say in game five, the only point that the Bruins top two lines had was an assist from Jake DeBrusk. And I know that you can't expect your star players to score every single night, but they could have used more from the top two lines, especially the second line, I thought, because Bergeron's line was certainly driving possession. I think he ended up with 18 total shots, which is insane, but just wasn't finishing. But the bigger of the two is that the Bruins came out sort of flat in game five with a chance to, to put the game out of Toronto's reach early on, and instead they let up two goals in pretty short order and just looked flat-footed. And really the second point was that the Bruins came out a little flat-footed in game five with a chance to really put the game out of reach for Toronto. Instead of, really driving the possession and really controlling the pace of the game, they had a bit of a slow start. They let up two goals pretty quickly, and it was an uphill battle right from the start. And I know it's been a long season and there's all sorts of things you can say, but it would have been great if the Bruins were able to have a stronger start in a game where they could have clinched and moved on to the next round.
Yeah, and to Toronto's credit, that wasn't the beginning of the game that I was expecting. What gave us optimism to start the second period was, that Boston's been in that situation before, and you feel maybe not a little more comfortable, but at least a little more relaxed about, they can get a couple of goals here. Let's see if they can get back in this game. But having the second period end with a decent enough of a gap that it's, a little bit of a challenge to get that comeback going. Now Boston was able to get one late in the second to even it, but I didn't think that goal was coming. I was a little surprised. And so I think that's what I'm taking into game six is, okay, they're on the road again. They've won on the road once. Each team has, obviously, but to be able to take that energy into, right onto the play and get that mindset of, all right, the boys are on the road. We got to go home with a win. That's what's given me, a little, it's going to make me sleep a little bit better tonight, getting ready for game six. What about you, Colin? What do you think?
Yeah, I, like we said, there's been sort of a couple things to cause a little bit of concern, but I think I fall more on the optimistic side of things. You know, I don't expect Tuukka Rask is going to get pulled in back-to-back games. And like I mentioned with, you know, the first line and Patrice Bergeron landing, you know, 18 shots on goal. It's not that they're playing poorly by any stretch of the imagination. They are getting plenty of good looks. You know, Freddie Anderson has done a great job in the last two games, really keeping his team in it. But eventually, sort of, you know, water finds its mark, and I expect the first line, if not the second line, is going to sort of break through. So definitely leaning more optimistic.
And Adam, how do you think that Toronto's going to be able to counter in game six? You think they'll be able to, well, we can save the predictions maybe for a little bit later in the podcast, but what do you think Toronto's been doing really well so far?
I think the best thing they did in this series was the lineups in game six or five, you know, splitting up all the scoring threats, right? Matthews on one line, Kadri on another, then JVR on another, and then Nylander on what you could call the fourth line with Plekanec and Johnsson. And I think that's probably been one of the better things they've done, which is, you know, spread it out. You have all this talent. Don't all mash it up in together into one line to be contained. And I think that worked out well for the Leafs going up, you know, scoring four goals and winning the game in game five. And that's the best thing they've done. And honestly, it sounds bad, but the best thing was Leo Komarov not being able to play and, you know, them being forced to put Johnsson in the lineup with Kapanen. And, you know, and I think they've just found combinations that are working, and they've found ways to get the players they need on the ice. And they did that in game five, you know, in Boston. Now they're doing it at home where they can pick and choose their matchups if they want. So I think they're coming into a stride now lineup wise. And I think that's probably the best thing that they've done.
Yeah, that lineup swap, I don't know why I was so surprised by it, because it is, you know, Mike Babcock, after all, he's going to, you know, roll the dice as he knows how to do. And it's, you know, it was a little bit surprising, but do you think somebody like Johnsson should have been in the lineup? I have to say that coming from, you know, not being able to follow the national games as closely as I would like to, I don't know a lot about his game. So you say that fortunately Komarov was out of the lineup, but do you think Johnsson should have been there?
Going into this season, I wasn't one of the ones. There were some people that said he should be in there, but I thought, you know, we would need what Leo Komarov can usually bring to the games, you know, and try and, you know, put him on the ice with Marchand and keep him out there, you know. In 2013, he had, you know, he played well. And, you know, he's been, last year, the year before, he had a really high offensive season, and that hasn't been really continuing, but I thought he brought something that we needed. But now I'm, you know, more in favor of Johnsson being in the lineup than Komarov. Which would be a sad way for him to end his, you know, Maple Leafs career, which is the only team he wanted to play for in the NHL. But, you know, I guess we're at the point where, you know, well, whatever we need to win, if we can get past the Bruins with Johnsson over Komarov, great, keep it going. And then plug him back in if Johnsson's not working against Tampa in the next round. So, you know, I think that's been a good addition, and I will admit I wasn't one who thought he should be in the lineup to start.
Yeah, and from our side too, I think that there's been a couple of bright spots in the youth on our lineup, so it never hurts to give somebody a chance if you think that they're rolling when it goes. For me, Jake DeBrusk has played extremely well, though he's been pretty limited in his minutes. And, you know, other than a couple of minutes of lulls for Tuukka Rask, I thought he's played pretty well too. So those are my personal reasons to be optimistic about the next game up, just because I think that Boston has had some strength in their core, and, you know, a bit of energy from, like I said, folks like DeBrusk, and seeing Tuukka be a bit more revived. Though I think he struggled early in game five, it wasn't entirely his fault. I think there were a couple of situations where Krug and Miller got stuck together, and Coach Cassidy for Boston was really adamant about splitting them up again just to balance their lines out. Like you said, for offense on Toronto, I think it hurt Boston a little bit on defense earlier in the series, trying to keep those two together. So as much as I wanted to see it, I went on record as thinking it would be a great idea. I'm glad that Bruce is the one running the team, because if I had stuck with it, it might not have gone so well.
Happens to the best of us. I picked Los Angeles over the Golden Knights, so we've all on the last podcast. So,
well, I did pick it to go the full limit for seven games, I think. So I will bite my tongue there, as with Sharks and Ducks. I thought that was going to be a series, and I didn't even realize it was over until we started getting ready for this. So, like I said, wish I could watch National a little bit more closely, unfortunately. So, blind predictions it was. Coming back to lineup changes, you know, with Adam talking about Toronto's offense getting shuffled around a bit, and I just mentioned the defense moving around, we had a couple of people come in and out of the lineup, and, you know, I'll let you lead us off, Adam, since we know that Nazem Kadri's first game back was game five. I thought that was going to be a big risk factor, and it ended up, you know, he was energizing for Toronto, I thought, but he wasn't as big of a liability. Obviously, he was playing a little more control. Do you think he really provided a lot to the lineup? Do you think they were kind of ready to play without him and just managed to plug him back in where he would fit?
No, I think it hurt them losing him. Just because their center depth isn't, you know, they have a lot of centers. Like, well, they have five centers up anyway. But, you know, I think it did hurt them. Like, we have Dominic Moore, who sat in the press box when we were down at center, and they put Marleau at center. So clearly, I think Moore's done. You know, I think they consider Moore being done as a player for them, and he's not going to get in the lineup. So, not having Kadri in center and moving, you know, who they've been playing as a winger to center hurt them. And, you know, even though he wasn't as, you know, offensively, you know, five, I think it helped having him back, you know, to play with his guys and, you know, be there. So with Kadri is much better than without Kadri. And, you know, if it wasn't a huge return, but it must have helped something. I mean, they won, right? So I'm always looking for the easy answers about, you know, what happened and you know, correlation and causation. So I'm fine with Kadri being back. I think it's going to be a real help in game six and seven.
Yeah, I thought Kadri looked pretty good for Toronto myself. Won a few key faceoffs, you know. I thought he looked good. I do have to ask, just because it's something that I think everyone here in Boston has been dealing with, what is the sort of the Toronto perspective on Nazem Kadri? I ask because everyone who covers the Bruins is well aware of, you know, what type of player Marchand is. There's really no hiding that he is a player with a pretty checkered history. But I'm curious, what is, at least with the media, what is the perception of Kadri in the greater Toronto area?
I think it's the same thing. Everyone knows what kind of player he is. But he's on our team, right? So it's a little bit more acceptable. But, you know, I think the perception of Kadri has changed over the past couple of seasons, you know, with the new coach, with Babcock coming in and using him more in a role that suits him better. You know, having a great year offensively this year, I think he's viewed as an integral part of the team just because of, you know, his ability to get under people's skin, you know, his ability to work against top lines. Like when we play the Oilers, he's really good at handling Connor McDavid as much as someone can. And, you know, he's also good at being the number two center on the team now, you know, playing with more scoring wingers than he used to. And he's adapted to that. And, you know, we know he's a little reckless, and that's been, you know, he can let his emotions overtake him. And that's been something we've been seeing in him since he was playing in the OHL. My wife always has a favorite story of when a call didn't go his way, so he threw his stick and it hit the glass right next to her head. And she hasn't liked him since then. But, you know, that's, you know, just been the kind of player he has. And that's been going down, you know, that's been, you know, less, but it's still creeping out, and it's just something we kind of accept about him.
So the sort of the impetus behind the question is, like any playoff series, there's lots of I'll call it bickering between the fan bases, and mm-hmm. my Twitter mentions are certainly no exception to that rule, with plenty of fans from Toronto doing the, you know, the whole butt Marchand, you have Marchand on your team, yeah. sort of deal. And like I said, if there's a Boston media member who's coming out and saying Marchand's not you know, a dirty player, I have yet to meet him, but I was wondering, yeah. you know, in the media world in Toronto, if he was thought that way, because I actually wrote an article on Stanley Cup of Chowder about how through the same amount of career games played, Kadri has actually been suspended more and for more games than Brad Marchand had at that point in his career. And it was just, you know, it was an interesting sort of look at it. Everyone knows Marchand is arguably the dirtiest player in the league, and he certainly has earned his reputation. But I just, you don't seem to hear that sort of conversation around Kadri, whether it's here in Boston or from a national perspective. And so I find that interesting, because he's certainly on his way, at least to arguably being as bad as Brad Marchand. So it's just interesting to get a different perspective on it.
Yeah. You know, honestly, that's a good point, because that's really not something I ever think about Kadri is until he does something that warrants a reaction from everyone else, be it this year hitting Wingles or last year clipping Ovechkin. And honestly, every other game of the year, I never honestly think about Kadri that way, and we don't hear about it. I don't think it's purposely not talked about. I think there's just been a lot of just not talking about Kadri going on, unless it's, you know, something really big. He's kind of more of a player that's more discussed amongst fans than in the media. Like, he's not there. He's now moved to the background with Austin Matthews and Nylander and Marner. And when before they came along, he wasn't used as big a role as he is now. So he was kind of just seen as someone who's plugging along and not really going to be an impact player for the team by, you know, the major writers. So I think he's escaped that talk just because he's never been as big a name on a good team either, right? The Maple Leafs haven't really been a team, honestly, worth talking about for a long time. No, even though, you know, they'll constantly flood at least Canadian national media no matter what they do. But I think that helped him escape a big reputation like Marchand has,
yeah.
just because he hasn't been in the spotlight as much. And that may change going forward.
Well, that's an interesting perspective on it, too, because you think about Kadri being, you know, you would think that as a former 7th overall pick that he's going to draw some attention, but having been drafted in that real, you know, what was sort of the beginning of another downturn for Toronto was that, you know, leading into the late 2000s and 2010, 2011. You know, I think it's interesting that you say that he escaped a lot of that criticism from having Toronto be in that position, and how visible Marchand was just in his first, you know, year on the National League roster for long stretches was 2011. You know, he's in that series against Vancouver. He's, you know, vilifying the Sedins and riling up pretty much everybody on their team. And that became his reputation just because, I mean, he sustained it. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that was the only reason why he would be seen that way. But Marchand was, you know, on full display when no other hockey was going on. And so that's definitely something that's going to stick with him for a long time.
Yeah, I have a theory on it, too. And part of it is just that Marchand has had a longer runway. He's played 100 plus
more definitely.
Games than Kadri has. And for all we know, Kadri may never be suspended again. He may, you know, play clean. And that's a huge part of it. Marchand has a longer history, you know, and to Adam's point, he's been in some high profile, you know, games and series. But I think the other part of it too, objectively, is that with Marchand, it's almost an every night thing that he's you know, he's so good at being an agitator that he gets under the skin of just about every fan base that watches him play against their team. Whereas with Kadri, he certainly has that element to his game, but for him, every one of his suspensions has been a hit to the head. He sort of has an MO when it comes to his stuff. And I think as scary and as dangerous as those incidents have been, they've been separated, and it's been one here, one a season later, so on and so forth. With Marchand, at least to me, because we watch every game, it's like you're wondering every night, is he going to do something dangerous or dirty or whatever? But I had to ask, because it's something that, you know, my mentions have been flooded with the but Marchand argument. It's always good to get a different perspective on it, for sure.
Yeah, and I wouldn't worry about the but Marchand, because last year it was going after Capitals, Tom Wilson. So, you know, there's always that there. So that's always going to happen. If you criticize one player, everyone's going to pick one guy in your team. That's
sure.
Fine. Yeah, I wonder how that role is going to evolve, because, as you know, we don't have any major league enforcers in the league now. It's got to be somebody like Marchand, like Kadri, you know, like Wilson, like you said, Adam, that draws the attention, or at least it distracts play from where a hockey player should be focusing, which is on possession and scoring goals. So I want to bring it back to Kadri just for one more point, is that something that surprised me about his return in Saturday night's game is how, as someone who is, you know, lauded as a decent two-way forward, how little of an effect, I guess more of an indictment on Toronto as a whole, but how little of an effect that he was able to have on Boston's offense, because this was one of the few games in the series where for long stretches Boston was able to control the puck. And I don't know if that was just a mandate from Mike Babcock to say, all right, lean forward, let them play with it, and we'll try and counter and score those goals. But I think that where we saw a huge improvement on the other side of the ice was the return of Patrice Bergeron. And I think having that contrast of, okay, well, yes, Kadri came back, and there's that X factor of who's going to, you know, who's he going to piss off next, or who might get hit. It was on the Boston side of the ice where they were able to control the puck for long stretches, and unfortunately for us anyways, Adam, I know you might feel differently, but being able to control the puck for stretches and seemingly control the end of the game. Did you, from the other side of the rink, see any concern with that? I mean, Bergeron is an elite center, but it seemed like Toronto was pretty well able to keep that line to the outside and limiting their quality chances.
Well, from what I saw in Game 5, I thought they did that as well. I will admit, when it started getting airy, I did stop watching for a bit just to not be as stressed out. Like my oldest son is a Leafs fan as well, and he likes the playoffs because it's his excuse to stay up later. But even he was like, I can't watch this, and put himself to bed just because it was so nerve wracking. So, you know, I switched it off for a bit and came back. It's like, oh, there's still. So I can't give too much insight to the end of that game, just because I was too scared to watch. But, you know, I think what you basically said is true. It's like, what I did see, it was a bigger impact with Bergeron back than Kadri. But I think that's just because Toronto was more spread out. And I think they were just trying to keep everything apart, so his chance to have an impact was more limited than, say, your number one center coming back.
And Colin, what do you think? Do you think Bergeron had enough of an impact? Maybe you were able to catch a bit more of the game. I was admittedly in and out too, but I did see, you know, towards the end of the game where they started double shifting that first line, that, you know, having been out with must have been some kind of serious injury where he had to miss a game. I didn't see Bergeron really lacking in any respects. Maybe, if anything, I saw him waiting in his spots, but that doesn't really indicate, you know, a lower body injury for me. It doesn't indicate an upper body. You'd think if he was slowing down, it was a lower body. So I just wasn't sure why he might have sat.
Yeah, it seems like a sort of a mystery injury, but I didn't notice anything either. I mean, he was zipping around the ice. There was no issue with the skating. You know, he didn't shy away from contact. He even got hit, you know, pretty good a few times and seemed no worse for wear. It was one of those games where, you know, I didn't think he played bad by any stretch of the imagination, you know, but I also didn't think it was, you know, his best game he's had. But it's always interesting because I generally go and I look at the stats during and after the games as well as, you know, I'm always trying to supplement, you know, the eye test with, you know, what the numbers are actually saying. And like I said, one of the things I saw is he had like 18, you know, shots total, not just on goal, but, you know, he was certainly driving play. You know, he had good possession numbers. It's just one of those things where, you know, Marchand and Pasternak, who have been the primary scorers, you know, weren't able to score. So, you know, it certainly could continue for a couple more games, but it's hard to imagine the best line in hockey is going to continue to get shut down. And I think the thing to note is that it's not that Toronto's defense in particular is shutting them down because they're getting a ton of good scoring chances. It's partially that they're just missing on open shots and that, you know, Frederik Andersen has had two pretty strong games in the last two games. So, you know, I thought he looked good.
Yeah, Frederik Andersen has been playing very well. What worries me about going into game six, I think, is, you know, what I saw a lot of in game five was where we didn't have the Bruins didn't have the opportunity to, you know, get some of those bounces. You know, there was a deflection that went wide. There was a centering pass that just missed. And, you know, those near scoring chances start to pile up and get in the back of a player's mind. You know, if Pasternak doesn't score, you can see him slamming a stick around and genuinely getting frustrated in how he's playing. And a bit of a concern for me going into game six is, you know, if those players who are supposed to be the big game and relied upon for points are out of focus, that the Bruins would struggle. I think they will be. That's my thought on how game six is going to go. I think the Bruins are going to be on their game. And Adam, I don't know if you feel differently about Toronto, but do you see any other causes for concern on your side going into game six, or do you think that it's going to be a real tight game?
I think it's going to be closer to game five than any other game this series. But I the worry is that the emotions are taking their toll or at least taking over for a lot of these players. You know, I think this is more of an emotional series, more of a series that they're taking personally than, you know, the other opponents we could have had in the first round. And while that can be fun to watch, it can also be terrifying because if you know they're letting their emotions get the better of them, then they're not playing as smartly, as intelligently as they could. You know, so I think that's a worry. That's a good point. I think my biggest worry is Babcock tinkering with the lineup again. I think we found a really good way to set it up in game five, and I think it's just worrisome that to go back to the well and tinker with it and, you know, slip Leo in and take Johnson out or take Kapanen out. You know, or as the big self-panic we had amongst Leafs Twitter today was William Nylander was skating with the scratches today.
Well,
and everyone's like, well, is he not playing then? And it's like, oh gosh, no, maybe he just wants to practice, you know, but I can't see them making an example of Nylander in game six.
Well, in your defense too, it's something that I think popped up on the Boston side of things today too, where Rick Nash was skating with the scratches. So granted, I think he's been a lot less of a factor in the series than we might've hoped, but genuine concern from wondering whether or not he's going to suit up. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't, but yeah, it's interesting too, where you see like maybe those are the players that just needed to, you know, practice their accuracy a little bit more today, or, you know, to get themselves in that frame of mind.
Yeah, maybe they're just hard workers, you know, that could be it too. But, you know, we all like to worry and panic ourselves on days where there is no game. And it's, you know, I think this series is taking a toll on the fans too, you know, the more than, say, Boston playing Tampa. You know, I think it's an all around more stressful series than we ever could have thought it would be.
No, definitely. Colin, do you think, how do you think this game six is going to play out?
Tough call. Like I said, it's been sort of two different stories, you know, from the first part of the series till now. You know, maybe the Bruins guy in me, but I think that we've been waiting these past few games for the top two lines to break out, and it just seems like they're going to find their way. And, you know, I think it's going to be in game six. And I think if they get a couple goals in, we've seen what this offense can do. Even in Toronto, I think they can really put the game away. So I think it's going to be Bruins in six. But, you know, like I've said all along, the Toronto team is better than a lot of people are giving them credit for. They match up well against this Bruins team. And, you know, it's a cop-out, but I would not be surprised to see it go seven and have it be a close game that could go either way in game seven. But said six games from the start. I'm going to stick with six games.
So. I was going to say, we're going to hold you to your prediction. I think I said five, so I'm obviously already out of the running there for a prediction. But I got to side with you. I think we were fortunate to have that embarrassment of riches and all the scoring in games one and two. And I think that was where I think the Bruins probably got a little too confident coming out of that, of saying like, okay, you know, yes, we need to be ready for the next game up, but we're going to, you know, take a quick stroll through Toronto and be ready for the second round. And I don't think that any of them would be willing to admit that, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of the younger players on the team started to say like, we can coast a little bit here because there's a long playoff run to go. And I don't see that from Toronto. That's my concern, is that the younger players are like you said, Adam, having that shuffle from Babcock to move players and balance the scoring out is just his way of showing his players, you know, I don't care how you're playing. This is how I'm going to structure the lineup. And if you don't like it, well, then enjoy golfing in a couple of weeks. You know, Babcock doesn't take any of that less seriously than anyone in the league. And so I don't know if you feel differently, Adam, but the jump in play since the end of game two was starting to show me that this was going to go seven games after all.
Yeah, after game two, you know, game three was played really well. And my original prediction was Toronto in six, just because I'm a romantic and I wanted the Leafs to win at home. But, you know, six or seven was the minimum, you know, was what it was going to be. And it's definitely becoming a very different series than when it started. You know, we're not being outscored 12-4 anymore after those first two games. You know, so it's definitely changed. It's getting closer. It's getting tighter. The series has been changing from when, you know, Boston outscored Toronto 12-4 in the first two games. You know, it's becoming tighter. It's becoming, you know, a closer series. It's becoming way more stressful to watch. You know, my sister knows was selling tickets to game six, and I was like, nope. You know, they were going under face value. They were just like, I just want someone to have these tickets. I can't use them. Who wants them? I can't watch that game live. I couldn't handle that. You know, at least at home I can turn it off and run away from it. You know, it's been a good series. You know, there's been flaws exposed from the Leafs and the Bruins and all that stuff, but you know, I just want it to end one way or another, preferably with a Leafs win, but let's just get rid of this stress off our backs.
Yeah, this early matchup of what was some pretty strong teams in the East was it seems like it's a bit much to handle, but we'll see how it goes. We have we have a lot to look forward to for Game Six. I know that we've discussed some of the hotter points of the last week, but Adam, I want to thank you for joining us. I think we're going to wrap things up for this week, but Stanley Cup of Chowder will be back with a series wrap podcast, and maybe we'll have you back to chat one way or another sometime soon, definitely in the off season, and we'll see what Tuesday night holds. Sorry, Monday night. Excuse me. We're going to see him at 7 o'clock game, guys. So Adam, thank you. And Colin, once again, thanks for participating, and Stanley Cup of Chowder fans, we'll see you next week. Before we go, Adam, where can people keep tabs on you when they want to hear the wallowing of Toronto fans?
I write at Pension Plan Puppets. You can read my stuff under El Seldo. That's also my Twitter, at ELSELDO. I am not on any other forms of social media because I really can't be bothered to try and figure out how Snapchat or Instagram works. So I am only on Twitter, and I am, excuse my creative insulting of Boston, but most of it revolves around Chowder. And you can follow me there, and I'm trying not to take anything too seriously, but I can't be held responsible mid-game. So maybe you can do it.
Well, thanks again, Adam. It was a pleasure chatting with you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me. It was a really good time.
Thanks, Adam.